did you get a chance? I know that not everybody is looking at only 284 folks cast it, you know, cast their ballots as far as the predicted order of finish and the preseason all conference. Did you have the opportunity to vote?
I did vote. I did. Yep.
You weren't the one that picked Tennessee to win the East, were you?
I was not. I'm trying to launch an investigation into that. And if I actually, Adam Sparks and I were texting, I think someone picked Vandy first last year, right? So we've got, you know, some media people going rogue here. But no, I actually picked Vandy 6th, and I picked Tennessee 7th, which I've had a little bit of debating with Vols fans today. But again, I mean, that Tennessee schedule is absolute murder. I mean, they have to play Bama and Auburn on the, you know, from the West. If you look at their five-game stretch, that's the kind of stretch that, you know, will break most teams. So that's really the main reason I picked them. But I could easily see, like, Tennessee and Vanderbilt, you know, coming down to a, maybe like a 5-6 versus 5-6 kind of game at the end for the right to go to a bowl game. That'd be kind of fun.
I'm going to say it right now. I'm more confident that Vanderbilt will not finish last in the East. I'm more confident in that than I am saying Alabama will go unbeaten in SEC play. Here's the thing. To me, when I don't know about you, but I actually look at a schedule and I go through it, loss W, loss mm-hmm. whatever the case may be on every team, instead of just looking, yeah, I think Alabama's good. I think Auburn's good. I actually play it out, and actually changed the way I had my – because my first thought, if I didn't do that, I would have put Georgia first in the East, right? I have Georgia, South Carolina tied with a 7-1 conference mark, but because I have South Carolina pulling the upset in week two, I'm one of the eight individuals that picks South Carolina over Georgia in the SEC East.
Ooh, I like the boldness there. Loving the Muschamps team. There's a lot of love for them this year. You know, like you said, a few others picking them first. I think I had them second. And absolutely, I mean, if you're going to do this, you have to look at the schedules because, I could look at the Balls and say, yeah, that's like a 3-5, 4-4 kind of team. But again, look who they play and where they play them. Oh, okay. You know, I mean, you have to do that. So, you know, you go through the game by game and, that's a very bold statement, too, about Vanderbilt and Alabama. You know, you're more convinced that Vanderbilt. I don't think I would join you in that just because I just think – I mean, look, Alabama, to me, gets to tune up until Auburn. I mean, they have the most ridiculously easy schedule for a team of that quality I've seen in a while. And, of course, you know, it'll probably be Alabama and somebody. I think Georgia, but maybe South Carolina and Atlanta. And then – there's that, but they get Auburn at home. They lost Auburn last year. Every time Saban loses Auburn, he bombs them the next year. So I don't know, man. I feel pretty good about Alabama being undefeated, but I do feel pretty good about Vanderbilt also avoiding the cellar. You know, they do have to – they go to Arkansas. They get Ole Miss from the West at home. Of course, they get Tennessee at home. South Carolina and Florida, could they get one of those two? You know, they've got some opportunity on the schedule, and I think definitely some opportunity to get to a bowl game.
Well, here's the thing. When you start looking at this, I mean, it wasn't even close, and this is the problem I have. Everybody just assumes it'd be so easy just to put Vanderbilt last and then move on. If you look at the way the votes played out, it wasn't close between Vanderbilt being picked 7th and Tennessee being picked 6th. It was decisive in the people that were voting that Vanderbilt is dead last. And that's when you're not doing your homework. If
you're right.
That's the same person who voted Missouri to win the SEC title, yet did not pick them to win the East. So go figure on how that happened. But here's the thing I want to say. You know, a lot of times we look at, and we've seen it in recent years, like Alabama using the failure in 2016. That's right. The only loss, a failure when they're one play away from winning a national title, used that to help them have a successful 2017 campaign. I think that 59-0 loss to Alabama for Vanderbilt in 2017, I think it will help them because here's the thing. Early on, I think Vanderbilt's going to get off to a very slow start in conference play. I think they lose to South Carolina, they lose to Georgia, they lose to Florida, and they lose to Kentucky. But here's where that changes and that script gets flipped. I think they win three of their final four conference games to finish 3-5 in conference play. I don't see Tennessee winning multiple games as far as conference play. At best, best, I see them 1-7 in SEC play this year. And here's the thing. When you lose to Vanderbilt 4 out of the last 6 years, I'm not picking you over Vanderbilt, especially if the game's being played in Nashville. You've got to prove it to me that you can get it done.
No, I agree. And, you know, I mean, with Tennessee, I think you're right. A lot of people are just like, nah, wow, they, you know, Vanderbilt last. And Tennessee just went 0-8. And I know it's a new coach, and so, you know, people hope it's a different style of play and much better coaching and all that, and it may well be. And sometimes you get that first-year coach bump, but, I mean, still, you know, it wasn't – I mean, you watched them play last year. They were missing a lot of things. It wasn't just, you know, Butch on his way out of it. They had a lot of issues. So, Tennessee's tough, though. They're tougher, I think, to pick because – you know, that Florida game early is so key. That's the start of a five-game stretch that should not be allowed in the SEC, honestly. If you look at who they go, Florida, you know, Georgia, Bama, Auburn, and then they go to South Carolina, you know, starting with Florida. That's seriously like inhumane treatment for Tennessee. But, you know, they have Missouri at home. They have Kentucky at home. You know, I mean, it's possible. Are they still on their feet at that point? And then, you know, Vanderbilt, I look at that game as – pretty close to a pick 'em game, but you're right. Vanderbilt and Kyle Schirmer sees orange, and man, he's just lighting things up. It's amazing how he's played in 2 years against that team. So it's hard for me to just pick Tennessee in that game, but it is Tennessee to me is you got to get the Florida game, and then can you somehow maintain, you know, your depth physically and your state of mind for when the schedule finally gets easier in November.
By the way, I did have Alabama winning the SEC this year. I have them winning the West. I do have them losing one game, and I think it's going to come in week 3 against Ole Miss. And the reasons why I went that, I still think there's some the unsureness and not full confidence as far as the starting quarterback position as far as Alabama. I still think there's some issues there as far as the learning process with individuals learning how to be starters as far as that secondary and the fact the game's being played in Oxford. And, oh, by the way, Ole Miss, Jordan Ta'amu at quarterback, but there are 3 receivers coming back, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, DeMarcus Lodge, 2,600 yards, receiving yards from last year, 25 touchdowns. Alabama seems like if you go back to, you know, to 2014, they lose to somebody that they probably shouldn't lose to. I think that third week is a game. Then, and after that, I think Alabama all of a sudden gets the ship righted and they win the rest of the way and make it back to the college football playoffs.
I like the way you're thinking there, and that is, of course, Ole Miss has had that history, you know, giving Alabama trouble, and that is early in the year. Maybe you figure, you know, that the QB thing could still be a thing. I mean, I guess. I expect Tua to be the guy, and I expect Nick Saban to wait as long as he can to somehow try to maintain QB depth there, but I don't think it'll happen. You know, I think whoever, unless you're going to go 2 QB, you know, the loser of that race is going to be gone, and you would assume it'd be Jalen Hurts. That's an intriguing game because of when it is. So I'll give you that. I think it's worth watching. Man, I just think Alabama, I mean, their backs, these young receivers, and just in the trenches. I mean, I know that they always lose a lot of guys in the NFL, but that looks like just an awfully, awfully tough team to me. But, you know, there's always some surprises in the SEC.
Well, and I think that, and by the way, visiting with Joe Rexroth with the Tennessee, and one of the things that you look on paper, you know, for over the last 2 years, you've seen other conferences as far as the Power 5 conferences, you know, closing that gap as far as the SEC. I think all of a sudden now we're going to go back the other way. You're starting to see the investment that Florida has in Dan Mullen, the $75 million guaranteed over the next 10 years as far as Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. And what I'm bringing up is this. I think this year there's so many teams that can beat somebody they're not supposed to inside the conference. I think that escalates as far as 2019 is concerned. It's going to be a fun fall as far as SEC play this year. It's not going to be like, oh, yeah, I can predict this game or that game because it's just this is the way it is. I think there's going to be a lot of unpredictability this year.
Well, I like your optimism because, you know, to me, I look at the East and I say it seems like in the last few years, you know, you typically picked Bama in the West, but you looked at the East and you were like, yeah, who knows? I mean, Tennessee was actually a pretty clear favorite 2 years ago, but it's kind of bounced around. Now it kind of looks like Kirby Smart is bringing Georgia, well, not kind of, they're just in the national title game. He's recruiting at an extremely high level. Like, we might have, you know, a few years of those two meeting. But you're right. I mean, there's some intriguing. I mean, these programs keep investing to try to make a run at Saban. And again, Kirby, he has, excuse me, has paid off. Jimbo Fisher, man, 10 years, $75 million. I mean, that is, you know, that's not to go 9-3. You know, so how fast can he get that going? I think personally that LSU is going to be in the coaching market soon. That's just, you know, as much as I love listening to Coach O talk, I don't think he's going to win at the rate that they expect and demand down there. But Dan Mullen at Florida is really interesting because I think he's been one of the best coaches in the country, really, in the last few years. He's obviously exceptional at doing more with less, at evaluating and developing players. Now we find out, when you have everything, can you then turn that into being a national title contender? When you look at Florida, there's no reason Florida shouldn't be. I mean, after all those years of what Spurrier and Urban Meyer did there, and with the facilities and with the access to talent, you've got to be a national title contender there, and it just hasn't been close. So Dan Mullen, is he just a more with less guy, or is he a guy who now can go all the way with more?
It's interesting, Joe, you bring up LSU. I have them going 4-8 this year. I have them going 1-7 in the conference. I have them I think that conversation about who's the next head coach for LSU will start up early on. I have them in conference play losing at Auburn, losing at home against Ole Miss, losing at Florida, losing at home against Georgia, losing at home against Mississippi State, losing at home against Alabama before they finally beat Arkansas as far as their first conference win, and then they lose at College Station against Texas A&M. I think it's going to be an ugly campaign for LSU this year.
Well, he won't see Halloween, if you're right. And when you go through that schedule, it's not like you're way out on a limb, you know? I mean, still think they have a lot of talent, a lot of defensive talent. But, yeah, it's just hard to believe with all the switching and, you know, just uncertainty about what they want to do offensively. That's just no way to live and flourish. So, yeah, I could see it. And then you start projecting. Because, look, that job is, I mean, you know, that's another one of those primo jobs that, you know, if they would have been able to get Tom Herman, we'd probably be talking about very different things right now in the SEC. But that's a job that you would think you would be able to attract some very, very, you know, high-level candidates and get it going quickly. So you wonder, like LSU fans right now, I mean, everyone's excited about football season. Everyone, wants their team to win. I'm sure a lot of people like Ed Orgeron, but, like, how many of them are like, let's just tank it and, like, start over now and not drag this out over 2 years, you know?
Well, I was telling people that they should have done that with Butch Jones at Tennessee 3 years ago, but nobody was buying into that. And nothing surprised me as far as the way that played out as far as Tennessee with Butch Jones. Nothing. Not one thing surprised me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I will say, and, you know, having just come in for, you know, 2016 – it's still amazing to think that, you know, even November of 16, just you go in and you win at Vanderbilt and you're going to be in the Sugar Bowl. And, yeah, you blew the SEC East with the loss to South Carolina, but you're still right in position to win 10 games and play in the Sugar Bowl. And, you know, to me, that's a solidifying achievement for him. Doesn't happen, and then, of course, it's quickly over the next year. But you're talking about going from, you know, a pretty steady, solid build with some troubling losses like the Oklahoma loss in 15, you know, Florida loss and late game management, but pretty steady build to being a favorite, being a team that people viewed as very talented, some NFL players in that team, and then all of a sudden just like, oh, my gosh, it's just the bottom dropped out. But I guess that's also, you know, the SEC, and that just shows you when things go bad of a coach and negative around a program, it can go really fast.
Joe Rexroad with the Tennessean joining us. Which coach stood out for you? For me, I visited with Gus Malzahn with Auburn, and here's somebody now has the stability. He has the investment. Auburn buys into him. He buys into Auburn. And usually coaches try to downplay an upcoming season. They try to keep the expectations at bay. He could not you know, hold his excitement down this era that we're getting ready to head into as far as Auburn football over the next 4 or 5 years. And a lot of it that has to do, obviously, with when you've got a contract extension like he received in the offseason. But, you know, to me, you know, he didn't hide his enthusiasm for his program, not just this year, but years to come.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I just happened to be around him a little bit. I did a thing. I followed Derek Mason around all day yesterday, and actually, I wrote a really long piece that's on Tennessean.com right now about that. It was some interesting scenes, and a couple of them actually were Gus Malzahn and Derek Mason, you know, interacting. And Gus did. He looked tan and happy, and
yes.
You know, like usually you think of him as just really milquetoast and not saying much, but he did seem to be in a good place. Of course, I was, you know, very focused on Jeremy Pruitt and Derek Mason, and I thought both of them were really good. I thought Pruitt handled all the Georgia stuff well without getting too snippy about it, but he kind of made his point. And I thought Derek Mason was really good yesterday. And, again, I was with him throughout everything, and there were a lot of really good moments for him in the various interviews with all these different outlets, you know, ESPN and SEC Network and all this stuff. But I thought he was great in the main room. I think back to 2 years ago, Derek Mason now versus then, and I think it's obvious how much more comfortable he is in that
right.
setting. And, you know, Derek Mason, I tell you, some coaches would say, you know, you don't want to, like, overpromise, right? But he just can't help but get excited and talk up his team, and I mean, I respect that. I mean, you know, he's not afraid to say that they should be good, even though I think there's some coaches that would – sort of, you know, downplay it. But I thought, I'm trying to think of other people who stood out.
One thing about Derek, by the way, you brought up Derek Mason, and what I loved about him, my very first year of covering the SEC Media Days was 2008, and that was back in the day where there were only 12 teams, not 14, and it was a three-day event instead of 4 days. And Tommy Tuberville, whether it was his day or not, he was there all 3 days pushing the Auburn program, whether it was the morning shows, the afternoon shows, as far as Radio Row, anywhere he could to be pushing Auburn, he was. And Derek Mason came in early on Wednesday, and he was making the rounds on the radio stations on Wednesday afternoon, and he did it when he was required to. And here's the thing. They're not even required to come in as far as Radio Row, but there's 31 stations broadcasting everywhere from Texas to Tennessee to Florida, you name it, and he was getting that message across. And I like the fact that he made the effort like that.
Yeah, it's funny. I wrote a little bit about that in this, and actually someone on Radio Row said exactly that to him. Maybe it was you, but I thought it was someone else who was like, you know, this is just like Tuberville. This is what Tuberville used to do. And it makes total sense for him to do that. I mean, especially, I think, obviously with Tuberville, it's like, well, you're always battling, you know, the Crimson, right? I mean, so you know, it makes sense that if you're like number two in your state, even if you're a huge successful program like Auburn, to get out there. But I think for Derek Mason, it makes total sense. And like he said, you know, like, sometimes it's just like, look, I've got players from just about all these markets, and it's cool to just like say something nice about them for the hometown folks to hear. You
right.
know? So, no, I think that was smart. And, you know, again, he had a lot of good stuff. I think he did exactly what he came there to do.
Joe, I was talking about it, and I was talking with the folks off the record with the SEC, and they were having conversations with me about, you know, the future and certainly not enough time to evaluate Atlanta before making a decision about next year because of hotel reservations, et cetera. So it was already a given that Hoover was going to be hosting 2019 as far as the SEC Media Days. What's going to be up for grabs is 2020. Atlanta certainly wants that. I thought this was an opportunity for Nashville to learn what went right and what could be improved as far as the way Atlanta handled their, you know, actually I'm going to say 5 days since the Sunday they had the nice kickoff there across the street. And but I think that I'm going to make an early prediction and say Nashville will be the city in 2020.
I can see that. I can see that if they want to get into a, you know, serious rotational thing right away, then if not 2020, I would say certainly within a few years. But I thought Atlanta, you know, I think the thing with Hoover is, I mean, it's not that Hoover's a big town, but, you know, Hoover's a suburb of Birmingham, but it more is sort of the thing in town when it's there.
Right.
You know, and obviously in Atlanta, this event is not, you know, sweeping Atlanta up in excitement. But I thought that it worked out pretty well. I did. Well, you and I talked about this. I didn't like how Radio Row was separated from the main media room. That made it seem like two different things. I always like it when you can kind of walk through Radio Row. And a lot of times you'll see, oh, there's a coach or whoever, and you can, there's more interaction with that. But other than that, I thought, you know, the fact that it was at the College Football Hall of Fame was very cool. And yeah, Nashville, it'd be interesting because you would think the Music City Center would be logical for something, but then again, they do like to do it in the hotel setting,
right?
You know, make that the media hotel and all that stuff. So that would be interesting. But obviously, you have it in Nashville, a lot of people would be excited, and it would be down there somewhere, and you'd have a much livelier area around the event than we saw in Atlanta.
Joe, thank you. I know you're tired. It's been a long week, but I appreciate you taking time out with us. We'll talk to you again next week. Before we let you go, remind the listeners again how they can keep up with all your coverage, whether it's college football or anything as far as the happenings here in Nashville and the Middle Tennessee area.
Well, thanks for having me, Johnny, and at Tennessean.com, at the newsstand, and then I'm on Twitter at Joe Rexroad. Appreciate it.
You have a wonderful weekend. Thank you.